Changing Lives FC are a football team with a story. Every training session and during every game, you can hear around a dozen different languages. That's because each member of the squad is a migrant, a refugee, or an asylum seeker. All of them have fled war, terror, or they're in desperate search for a better life. They are all young men who would be extremely vulnerable if left to fend for themselves. Joining us on this podcast is their manager, David Simmons, a PE teacher living in Harlow in Essex, who is also the founder of Changing Lives Community Services, a project dedicated to keeping vulnerable youngsters out of the hands of gangs and violence. David is no stranger to extraordinary journeys. He was once threatened by a six-year-old with a knife, which is partly what motivated him to step up and make a difference in the first place. But this football team has been a challenge like no other. Getting a group of players who don't all speak the same language together is difficult enough in itself, but that's made all the more harder by the discrimination that swirls around them. According to David, the team have been plagued by incidents of racist abuse and further discrimination from some opponents. He has even had to invest in a video camera he feels he needs to protect his players. As David says, racism is still happening every Sunday, and it's something that desperately needs kicking out of the game.
Now, I could have introduced you to this podcast in about three or four different ways, considering everything you've got going on at the moment, but I'll start by essentially introducing you as manager of Changing Lives FC. They're a football team, for anyone who doesn't know, for refugees and asylum seekers in Harlow, in Essex. So start off by telling us just how was that team born, but perhaps more importantly, why was that team needed?
Okay, so the team was created by a lady called Emma Hastings, and she was a social worker. And 2 years ago, they formed a team called Northbrooks FC. And because this lady, she was getting so many refugees and asylum seekers coming to the team, she couldn't cope with it because there was so many. So the council and her, they asked for support. So they contacted me and they said, look, David, we've got a new team and we need some support. And I was a bit optimistic. Like, I wasn't too sure what I was going into. I didn't really understand. And like most people, people think that when they are meeting refugees and migrants and asylum seekers, people have this opinion that they don't deserve free things, especially funding and things like this. And I sort of had that concept, like, why should I support these people when they've just come over to the country? But I gave it a chance. I wanted to help these people. And as soon as I saw the first person, as soon as I went to that training session, everything changed. My whole mindset changed, everything completely. And these guys have fantastic stories. They are human beings. And I think people forget about that these guys are human beings. And when I met the team, it was fantastic. They are technically brilliant. They are gifted players. The only thing that they lack was the knowledge of the game. So simple things like the offside rule and throw-ins. That's what they lacked. And the first season, it was hard. It was hard for the boys because there was lots of racism, discrimination towards them. And there was occasions where there was violence on the pitch. I think our team had the most yellow and red cards because our players reacted to what the other team was saying to them. And the other team knew that they would get a reaction from them. So they know if they said something, then our boys would react. And that was a simple case. So our team, Northbrooks, was, I think we only won two games in the league, but it gave them something to do, a positive outlook on life. And then this season, I've taken over as part of the Changing Lives project. So we called it Changing Lives FC. And it's gone from strength to strength, really. The discipline has been much better. However, things haven't changed on the pitch. So discrimination and racism still exists. And you've got everything going on with the FA. You've even got the most topical thing of the chairman resigning due to his comments. And we've had to have hearings already regarding fights on the pitch and what teams have said about our players. So it still exists. It's still happening when we're playing. I've actually had to invest in a VO camera, which tracks and monitors the football, but it also picks up on what people say. So it's quite like a camera, and it goes up quite high, but it gives these players a bit of protection. And I didn't want to have to do that, but I felt that I had to protect my players. But yeah, I've fallen in love with the team, and it's like my little family when we go and train on Saturdays and when we play on our matches. And when we score, it's like winning a World Cup. The joy that you have of when these boys score is fantastic. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we'll pick up the racism side of things. But in terms of those backstories that you were mentioning before that sort of changed your perceptions and changed your outlook, what kind of backstories are we talking about?
So these guys, they've come without their family across seas, deserts, on back of lorries, and they've escaped war, and they haven't got anyone else, and they're escaping because they're going to war or they're running away from terror. And people don't get that. People don't understand that. And it's sad because these guys are human beings. And why do we have these horrible opinions? I spoke out to RT News a few months back, and the amount of trolls that abused me and said that I should die and that they're going to rape my parents because I was supporting these young people is wrong. And it infuriates me that people have these opinions. And these guys are young. They're 16, 17, 18-year-olds. And, yeah, like, why are we not supporting them? Why are we not doing more? When they get to this country, why are we not doing more to protect them and help them? And it scares me that these people have these sorts of opinions. And I was on the news channel talking for about 3 minutes. And after those 3 minutes, when it went on Facebook or whatnot, the amount of abuse I received was horrendous.
Which... shockingly, it sums up the situation right now, doesn't it? What's it been like to manage them when they've got all these challenges, whether it's off the pitch or sometimes on the pitch, as you've alluded to?
Yeah, so at first it was quite challenging because some of them speak little English, but it was a challenge worth taking up because I love it. I enjoy it. Like, I've got to do more demonstrations. I've got to show them more. I've got to get some of the boys to translate what I'm saying into English. But that's just all part and parcel of the job. And that's why I love it so much, because it's so different. Like, who else can say that they've got 10 other nationalities in their team and they're all playing one thing and football? And it brings so much joy and happiness to them. And it's something that's so great. And football is a universal thing, and you can connect with so many people just by playing football. And it's helped them, and it's helped me understand what their life is like. And what I am hoping to do is try and spread the story and try and keep it running and try and help these young people. And because people don't see them as humans, people don't see them as people, as young people, and it's so tough for them. And football is sometimes their only way out. And these guys are vulnerable. They come over by themselves, and football is a new thing for them, and they're part of a sort of a smaller community with a football team, and they're not going into drugs or knife crime. They're getting into sport, and that's really their main focus. And some of them really want to be superstars, and I have the confidence that if they keep training hard, if they keep working hard, then some of them that we have got will be in a major football team. Because I think they're so technically gifted.
Mm-hmm. I suppose it works out, and partly their escapism from whatever it is they're dealing with. But like you say, without that structure that a lot of people in this country benefit from. I suppose they're playing catch up a lot of the time, whether it's regard to their own football coaching. In terms of the abuse that you've talked about, how we're so quick, I think, to point the finger and blame at other countries, particularly when it's, say, like the England football team, and they get, and you hear chants coming through the TV, stuff like that. But how important is it that we essentially look at our own country and our own football? Because I don't think we are in any way immune from self-criticism about what's going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we start pointing things at other countries, we've got to look at ourselves and sort our own country out, to be honest with you, because racism and discrimination is still happening every Sunday. And it really is. And we've had to appeal and go to FA hearing because one of our players was subject to, I would say, discrimination. From that, it turned into a mass brawl. And I had to get statements, witnesses, and yeah, it turned pretty ugly. And that's probably one of the first times where I was like, nah, do you know what? Because you can either, when you go to an appeal phase, you either say, yeah, I accepted it and I'm going to get a ban. And you can either say, and then you can give all the statements. And I said to the player, I said, look, do you want to appeal this? Do you want to fight this? And if you do, I'm right behind you. And he said, yeah, I want to fight this. I want to appeal it. So that's exactly what we've done. We've got all the statements in. And from those statements, the FA rejected the claims from the other team. And yeah, my player wasn't banned at all. And that was fantastic because they were going with what we were saying and what the player wasn't saying. Do you know what I mean? We were fighting a big cause here of like discrimination. And yeah, that was one of the big things that gave us support, that the FA was supporting us. And they weren't letting other teams get away with it. So that was a big thing for us. But yeah, look, it is still happening. We are trying to fight it from being the only migrant team in the UK. We know we're going to get it. And that's the sad thing. We know in these games we're going to be targeted because of what sort of team we are. But every game I tell the boys not to react, because that's exactly what they want. They want us to fight. They want us to get involved in these altercations. But I'm telling them, lads, you can't do that. You just got to walk away. And that is something that we're still building on. But yeah, look, it's still happening, even at grassroots level.
How do you turn that around? Is it education or, I don't know, just tapping into society and maybe changing the narrative?
It's difficult. These guys that we play have got their own opinions. They're not young guys that we're playing. We're playing older men. And they have their opinions on our team already before we even play them. So it's very hard. People are stuck in their ways, in the ways from before. And it's hard to change that unless we talk about it and show them positive things. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be tough. But look, I'm determined to try and change people's opinions.
If that, I mean, you've already alluded to it with the sort of the knife crime side of things, but if that team didn't exist, or are these young people rather at risk of being targeted?
Well, these guys come over with absolutely nothing. And then Essex County Council would sort them and give them accommodation. And then they get a little amount of money a week. And that's to spend on clothes, food, water, energy, all that sort of stuff. So these guys are very vulnerable. So when you've got someone like a gang member looking at these young boys and they say, look, can you run this for me and I'll give you £50? £50 would last them a whole week. So these guys are so vulnerable that if there was no support for them, if there was no football, and it's not just me that's helping them, there's loads of other organisations helping them. If there wasn't for them that in place, then these guys would be going down that path. And that's exactly what we do not want to happen. These guys coming over have absolutely nothing. So it's really important that we protect them, we educate them. Like these guys that we're working with, they go to college, they're learning English, they're learning core skills, they're getting education to build them up. So yeah, we have to support them.
And again, it goes on with that narrative with the abuse side of things, because I think we can all agree it's not just confined to football. I think we see it in other walks of life too, on social media, like you mentioned before. Is that, it's trying to keep that manageable as well, so that these guys have more of a positive outlook on life and that they're not constantly being bombarded with this kind of abuse. So I imagine that's a big part of the puzzle as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So even last night, I was delivering care packages to some of our boys, and I just wanted to make sure that they're all right. But they even said that when they walk through their town, they feel scared, and that they have to walk in a group of three because they're worried of what people will say and what people will do. And look, we're in 2020 and that's still happening. And then we've got online abuse that I'm even getting because I'm supporting these people. So in 2020, that is still happening. And it's just crazy, it's shocking. But like, so we're trying to talk about it and be positive. Is it going to change people's opinions and react? And is it going to? But we have to keep talking about it. We have to keep trying to raise the awareness of it, because we have to protect these people. And if we don't, then these guys are going to be hurt, abused, and it's going to. It's look, Joy. It's just not nice. It's not a nice thing. We wouldn't want it. So what are we doing to other young people?
Yeah, it's exactly what we saw during the Black Lives Matter protests.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned it a few times on this show where the comments on Twitter and on Facebook became so much, we couldn't moderate it anymore.
Mm.
And that impact is widespread. It's not just on us as the publisher. People see that from all walks of life, and they think it's about them, and it's totally understandable that you can feel completely alienated by that kind of language constantly being used.
Yeah.
I'll flip it onto some of the positives, because there are a lot of positives about this football team at the same time. And I know, as we were talking about just before we pressed record, in terms of performances, there was a lot to be happy about before the season's obviously had to come to a stop again, thanks to lockdown two. But it must be so proud for you to see how this team has developed and how they've come together.
Yeah, like I'm so happy that these boys are playing. I get about 30 come to training every Saturday. It's so hard to pick a team because they all want to play on that Sunday. It's so difficult, but technically they are so gifted that they can pass. They can take on the man. Like I said before, the only thing that they need to work on is their knowledge of the game, offside rule, taking throw-ons, etc. But look, we're working on that. We've won two games already. We're through to a cup round. We've only lost two. But I would say that in all our games, we've worked so hard, and some of the games that we shouldn't have deserved to lose. But do you know what? I do think that we've got the potential of winning the league or winning a cup. And what a fantastic story that would be to everyone, that this first migrant team has won the division. So yeah, like I'm up for the challenge. Bring it on. Let's just hope that we don't get another lockdown.
Yeah, I think we can all keep our fingers crossed for that one. Going forward, is that the ultimate aim for the team, or are there grander ambitions for what you want them to achieve?
Yeah, so I want to take them up the leagues, and I want to put them into tournaments. I just want to take it as high up as I can, as I possibly can. With that, as a team gets higher, you need more investment, you need more money. But look, we've got fantastic support from our funders, Active Essex, who are brilliant and giving us money to support the boys for the whole season. So let's just take it as far as we can, really. Fortunately for me, I'm the secretary, chairman and manager, so I can't be sacked, so it's great for me.
Job security as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
In terms of throwing it back to more of a pandemic-wide discussion and the situation with grassroots football right now, of which there's obviously a lot of talk about the funding, the support there is available at this particularly difficult time, how's that manifested itself for you? Because I imagine it comes down to games being cancelled, training being cancelled, but Do you see that with other teams in your area as well, that they're struggling particularly right now?
Yeah, so luckily for us that we're funded, so thankfully we haven't had that issue. But yeah, like grassroots team that are reliant on players playing subs, and if you are in a contract with a venue for the pitch hire, then you've got a massive issue. Luckily for us, our hirers pay as you play sort of thing, so we haven't had that issue. But yeah, like grassroots teams need to be playing, and as well as that, it's great for your well-being, your mental health. But for the small teams financially, like not paying your subs each week and you're still having to pay for the pitch fees, that's a massive problem. So I do hope that there is a budget available from the government for these grassroots teams that are unable to carry on, because it helps so much more than just playing football. It's your mental health, well-being, all that sort of stuff. So it's massive. It's huge.
Yeah. To throw it off the back of that, how important is sport?
Oh,
because I mean, we could talk about that all day, but I mean, we see so many examples of it, don't we?
Yeah, like mental health is enormous, and sport is one of the major drives to get to push mental health down. And at the minute, we've seen an increase in that, young people committing suicide. So look, sport is huge and it's massive. And with this lockdown, and not being able to play with your friends and socialise, it's just it's brought it all to home that like sport is so big and it's so important to have. So yeah, we've got to try and push that. If we do have another lockdown, we can't stop sport, because that is fundamental to people's lives.
Mm-hmm. And like I've said a few times, the positive for me for this lockdown is that there is some sport to watch on TV.
Yeah.
Whether it's Premier League, whether it's golf, whatever it might be, there's something. But if you're, what I've missed the most is being able to go out and do it.
Yeah.
Because it's just not on the cards right now. Yeah. And I can only imagine how that must be affecting so many people, particularly when, you know, you're looking forward to that and you're building up to that every single week, every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Because some people don't even have any gardens or anything like that. So when you're confined to a flat or a small house, it can be very tough. So it is really important that we try and get through this lockdown and get back being active and sociable again.
Mm-hmm. Has this, or the pandemic in general, highlighted just how important it is? Because I know funding was a massive talking point beforehand. But has it maybe put a renewed focus on sport like there never was before?
Absolutely. So when we were running our projects to get children out of gangs, sport was a fundamental drive into hooking those young people to our project. Unfortunately, now we can't run that project because of the lockdown. And sport, we knew before that was the main hook. It gets children talking, it gets children playing, it gets children socialising, it incorporates all these other key skills. But now more than ever, we need that. We need to push that even more. We are fighting, so Changing Lives is now fighting for a shop facility in the town centre, because we actually want to offer something to these young people where it's on their doorstep. And if it's in a town, the footfall should be high. And we want to incorporate sports in a shop. So we want to take a derelict shop and then convert it into some sort of shop facility where we've got boxing going on, we've got football, we've got karate, we've got martial arts, we've got tennis, we've got all this sort of stuff going on in this one hub. And then we can offer it to these young people. And off the back of that, we want to make this big. And that sort of centre should be somewhere in every town, city across the UK. And it's not a leisure facility, because we're incorporating educational workshops within that, talking about mental health, our well-being, talking about staying safe on the streets. So it's not a leisure facility, it's an educational hub for our young people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think loads of people can definitely get behind that idea as well.
Hello listeners, I'm here to tell you about another exciting partnership for us here at Sportspiel. We have now joined up with a brand new internet radio station and podcast network called The Bear. The station plays various music genres, talk shows, and of course podcasts like ours, and you can listen to it all on their website, that's thebear.live, or you can download their Android app as well. The station is also available on the likes of Get Me Radio, if you have an Apple device, for example. What that means for us is you can hear our episodes broadcasting every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. They'll be alternating between new releases and ones from our archive, so it means you can catch up on any that you might have missed. But there's also several other great shows that are part of The Bear, if they take your fancy, such as The Dr. Squeeze Show and also 60,000. So if great radio is what you're after, go and check out The Bear now on their website, thebear.live, or on their social media pages too.
And that brings me perfectly on to sort of the second part of this conversation, which is, as you've alluded to, changing lives in Harlow. No prizes for guessing where the name of the football team has come from. But specifically, I think my maths is correct in that it's now just over 2 years
yes.
since it started. And for those who don't know, the project is aimed at preventing gangs exploiting young children in the area. And sport is obviously a big part of that, as you've mentioned. How has that project developed in the last 2 years? Because I imagine first off, it's grown so much, but you must see so many rewarding things off the back of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So because it's growing so big, we've actually had to change the name now to Changing Lives Community Services, because we are now branching out to other towns and cities. So we are getting bigger, and more councils are approaching us to help their young people. It's been crazy since March. We've helped, well, our camp in the summer, we had 1,000 children that we supported. So we won a 5-day, 6-week program to support young children and to getting working parents back to work. So that was huge for us, and also a bit of a dream, because me and Ben always envision us to run these camps, and we've done ones with our own companies, but to run one during the whole 6 weeks for 5 days was crazy, and it was brilliant. And then on that, we've got our care packages. So we're supporting about 40 families a week, providing these care packages, helped by the food bank. So we are growing massively, and because of COVID, we've been supported quite heavily. And it's been fantastic that we are able to support loads of people in the community. And it's brilliant that people have come and supported us. They've donated, they've given us clothes, they've given us food. And it's made it enjoyable, because people absolutely love it. Like when we come in with a care package, their face lifts up. And it's someone there to support them through this dark time at the minute. Yeah, people appreciate it, and we appreciate them for supporting us.
Yeah, even just seeing it firsthand, growing from what it was when we first met to what it is now, it's just, I obviously know the answer to this, but what is it that drives and what motivated you to start making a change in the first place? Because there's the incident with the 6-year-old that we've talked about before, but also the incident in Harlow where I think you saw some kids trying to rob another child on their bike.
We had the incident with a 6-year-old. With that, like, a 6-year-old with a knife threatening a knife at you, like, you don't expect that, and change has to happen. And I think since the project, we have educated more young people about that. We had the group of teenagers trying to rob another child's bike. And these occasions, these things happened for me to do something. I had to react and do something, as well as that. Both my parents, my dad was a paramedic, my mum's still a nurse. So these guys are helping people, and I've seen that when I was a child. that these guys are helping people and saving people's lives. And like, I've always wanted to be a police officer, actually. And I've always wanted to protect people and help people. And these scenarios, these actions that I saw, I couldn't just sit back and do nothing. I have to do something about it. And I'm so happy, I'm so glad that I was able to set up this project and that it's going really, really well. But I wouldn't have done it just by myself. I've got Ben, I've got other agencies involved who have supported our project, and it's been amazing. We've had a lot of media coverage, which has been great for us. But yeah, like, I'm really thankful for all the support that we've got from it. But it just doesn't stop, and we have to keep on going and keep pushing it.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, the project has obviously grown a lot bigger outside of Harlow, but obviously started in Harlow, very much a Harlow-centric project. For people who don't know it, how would you describe the town?
So I think the town is better, and it's got, I would say it's got a lot of things happening, but we need more things happening. In terms of education and sports, there's lots of derelict shops in the town, which I think is a bit of a problem. And I think we can do more about that by doing more things in those derelict shops. The town has got a lot of the refugees and migrants in the area. So we have a lot of, I don't know, one of our boys a year ago got stabbed in the town because they were trying to rob his bike. So we do have these minor issues, but the police and the council are trying to implement and do things about it and put things in place to stop that from happening. So we are trying to work with the council, with Robert Halfen, with the police, and things are getting better. And it's no way that on the same length as London was. So yeah, like we're pushing a key partnership with the council, with the police. It's not perfect. I don't think any town's perfect, but we are working on it and trying to get things in place to help the community even further.
Mm-hmm. And touching on the gang situation, if you like, and Harlow's proximity to London, it's inevitable there's going to be some sort of fallout, as many towns in Essex and the counties that surround London are seeing, what with county lines, drugs, gangs and all that sort of stuff. And the children who are vulnerable are particularly susceptible to getting caught up in that because they are a target. Is that what you see in Harlow? And trying to, so I suppose from your point of view, it's trying to identify the kids who are most at risk of falling into that lifestyle.
Yeah, because we've got the Terminus house block in Harlow, which the councils from London put all the families in the flats. So then that causes a bit of an issue because you've got all these different families from different backgrounds all put in one block. And then these gangs sort of know that, they loiter about in the town, they see that, and then they speak to them, and then they start sort of exploiting that. Yes, it is a big issue, but I know that the police are working hard to sort that. The council are working hard, and we are trying to be in that area, in the town, so we can talk to them, we can put on these workshops, so we can stop it from happening. I know at the minute, antisocial behaviour, violent crime is actually on the increase. So we are working with the crime commissioner in doing something about that, because we do know that it is on the increase, it is on the rise, but we want to be at the forefront, at the front, trying to prevent it from happening. So if we can talk to these young people before they get really deep into the violent crime, then hopefully we can prevent it from spiralling out of control. So we do know it's an increase, but look, we know that in other parts of London, they are higher. But look, we are doing as much as we can to support the council, to support the police.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things are potential gang members trying to pinpoint in terms of trying to bring a child in? And how do you then counteract that?
Yeah, so children that are not confident, that are doesn't have a role model, parents that are low on income. So these guys are very smart. They're very manipulative. they will know who to go for. So when these got children who have been referred either to from social services or from the police, they come to our project, we want to make sure that we've got someone in place, like a role model. So we've got a mentor that can talk to them and ask them what they want, what they need, the support. And yeah, we put things in place for them. So not only would we support the child, we would support the whole family. And that's one of the major things that we do, is we don't just support one person, we would support everyone that has got an issue. And what drives that child to keep coming to our project is the sport. And then if they really, really enjoy it, then we push them into team sport. So they'll go on to maybe playing a Saturday game or a Sunday game, and they feel part more of the community. And then, yeah, like it just links on from there.
Mm-hmm. To throw it back to the pandemic, did you notice a change at all during lockdown? Because I think, certainly from my perspective anyway, I think there seemed to be less criminality and knife crime during those lockdown months. And perhaps once life started to reopen again, it perhaps spiked a little bit as well.
Yeah, so it's strange, because I was looking at data from Essex, and it seemed that it was increasing, and I wasn't too sure why. What like, we're in lockdown, people shouldn't be out, so why is crime on the increase? And it's because we're so isolated, so locked in, people don't know what to do. So it could be boredom. It could be people can't afford because they've lost their job, so they're stealing. So we've got all these aspects. We've got mental health causing issues now. So I thought that, but when I looked into the data, it's actually on the increase, which is scary. And now we've gone into another lockdown. It's tough. It's tough for the police. I had the same perception that because we're in lockdown there'll be less people out, but it's not the case. Crime is definitely rising.
Mm-hmm. And even with running your own projects, what with all the restrictions we now have to live by, social distancing and everything, that must have an impact on you. You've had to completely improvise in ways that you never would have expected to.
Yeah, it's tough, because our project unfortunately has to pause due to us renting it from a leisure facility. And because leisure facilities have to close, we would be classed as childcare, and we would be able to continue it. But because leisure facilities have to close, we've had to shut. So we've lost our young people at the minute. So we're trying to engage them through our online workshops, but we haven't got that physical, what we would do at our project normally, where we could speak to them on a one-to-one and really go into depth with what they need and what they want. Now it's all online, which is much more difficult, much more harder, but we are trying to do it with these cooking recipes, our educational workshops, our sporting stuff that we do online. So it is very difficult, it's very hard, but we are still trying to get to grips with it all. In terms of me teaching in the school, yes, we've got all the bubbles that we've got to work with. We've got to make sure that we clean all the equipment, we wipe it all down. And guidance is always changing. So we have to be right on top of it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, for a time it felt like the rules were getting updated every 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. When we were reporting them anyway. And I wanted to touch on the social media side of things too, because we've mentioned it in terms of the abuse, and that it can have a negative side, but it can have a positive side as well. So it was really a swings and roundabouts situation, because I know, particularly when we're talking about the gang situation, that's a real avenue for them to essentially influence a child who is vulnerable. But then from your perspective, you can also use social media for a positive outset as well, particularly when we're in the situation we're in and we can't all be together right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is really important that when we win, so our Change in Lives FC, when we win, we put it up on social media, and the response that we get back is amazing. It's brilliant, and it's great to see so many people be so positive about it. But like, even when you post this up, you are going to get negative responses, because people don't agree with what we are doing, what we're talking about, and it's going to cause divide. And that whenever I talk about it, I have to know that I'm going to get a backlash from it because people don't agree with it. But I have to remain positive in myself that what I'm doing and what I'm saying is the right thing. And the more I say, the more I do, the more we talk about it, hopefully we'll put people on that positive way. Like I was doing these stories and I was going to the refugees' houses and stuff like that. And we was talking about their life and how they got into the country. And that divided people. And it divided my own family. It divided my friends. But it made people realize and understand what they actually went through. And when you see them as people, real people, and you see them what they are, people understand it better. So that was my feeling, that if I was able to actually speak to someone one-to-one, ask them questions, it might be able to show people what they actually are fighting for. Why are they actually coming over to the country for? What made them come to the country? Not for more money, not for our job, but to come out of war, out of terror. And some of these guys, one of them I filmed on YouTube, he was underneath the lorry, not inside the lorry, underneath where the wheel arch is. And he was underneath there for hours. And he was, 17? And at 17, I was in college, like doing my A-levels and whatnot. This guy is underneath a lorry, all right? And that's just crazy, like madness. And then we've got one guy, another one, who's on a crammed boat with about 50 people in it. He didn't know if that boat was going to sink or not. And he was 16. And it's ridiculous that these people have opinions where they're saying that these guys don't deserve to come over, don't deserve a chance. Who are we to say that? We live in our lovely homes with water, electricity, with no war going on. Why are we saying that? And that's why it's so important to show these positive things on social media, positive aspects of their life, of what they're doing, because people are so caught up in their own way that these guys are negative, are bringing bad things to this country, when that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social media's got a real power to change that perception that we talked about before.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
What more needs to be done to, I suppose, change that perception, but also help children who are vulnerable and in vulnerable situations at the same time?
That's a tough question. So we can do more. So doing our project more. So if we was able to do it every day, unfortunately, because of funding, we're only able to do it twice a week. If we was able to do it every day, would benefit the young people, the families more. I'm still working in the school. So this changing lives isn't my full-time job. This is just a part-time job that I'm doing either after school or on a weekend. So I would like to put all my time into changing lives and to help more people. But with that comes more funding. I really want to push this. I want to take it to every town. And if we can get more people supporting us, the police, the councils, Harlow Town has been a major support for us. They've given us so much funding. They have given us support. Robert Halfman has been fantastic. So we've got people backing us. And then it's just the case of when do we go to, maybe because we've got Basildon now, we've got Uttlesford knocking on our door. It's making that right choice and making sure that we've got the same energy, the same input and effort that we put into Harlow, into these other towns. Even just talking about it is going to raise the profile more. It's going to get people engaged. It's going to show people that, you know what, there needs to be more projects like this going on, because gangs are still going to exploit. They're still going to try and get the drugs, and it's not going to stop. So we have to be ready to try and prevent that. So if we was able to get into schools and talk about it from year one, year two, from 6, 7, then do you know what, we're doing our part. We are preventing it before they even get to secondary school, that, you know what, carrying drugs is a bad idea. So that's where it's got to start. It's got to start in primary school level. It's got to be on the national curriculum, and we've got to get in there early doors to stop that from reaching higher.
Yeah, and like I say, it's probably really hard to find someone to argue against that. there's so much positive work that Changing Lives has been doing for so long now, and you yourself has been doing, and it makes such a massive difference to every single child who's part of that project. And I think we can all see that across the board. I couldn't really finish this podcast without quickly mentioning that you're Lord Dave on the Ranganathan. For anyone who's probably watching this or listening to this thinks, I know him from somewhere. How did that even come about?
So the application was all about people being very topical. And I actually went on to it thinking I could talk about the project, like how we're talking. Talking about the project, talking about helping people. And I went into it thinking, okay, am I going to be serious on this, or am I going to be myself on this? And I went into it thinking, okay, I'm going to be serious. I'm going to talk about changing lives and what we do. And then, yeah, it didn't work out like that. They asked me when I was in my interview, they said, oh, tell us something interesting about you. And I said, my girlfriend bought me a Lord certificate, so I own a piece of land in Scotland. And they're like, oh, okay, that sounds good. And then I got a call the next day, said, oh, we would like you on the show as Lord Dave. And I was like, oh no, what have I done, what have I said? But you know what, it is good fun, and I do enjoy it, because I do all of this serious stuff. I work in a school, I work with all these families and all these children, and you know what, it is nice just to have a joke and
definitely
and just have a bit of humor. And yeah, for the 6 weeks of filming, we've done two series now, and it has been good fun. Even when I walk into my local Asda, the security man stopped me and was like, you're Lord Dave, aren't you? I was like, oh no. But yeah, do you know what, it's raised the profile of Changing Lives, and more people, when they go on to see me, they go on to see what I'm about, which is great. So it has got a lot of positives of it, so which is great.
Yeah, and like you say, it's just like the sports side of things, it's nice to have that bit of escapism every now and again, isn't it? Just have a bit of a lighthearted laugh, because there's a diverse group of people on that show. And yeah. I mean, probably the most controversial thing you said is that straws. Well, I think it was a straw. You didn't like paper straws.
Yeah.
So I imagine that got people talking. Looking forward then, my final question, in terms of Changing Lives and the football team. I mean, if we can fast forward to 12 months' time, where would you like them both to be?
So I would like Changing Lives FC to be picking up the Harlow District League 2 trophy. And then, we're winning it. Yeah, absolutely. And then Changing Lives Community Services to be in, we were in two schools at the minute. We would like to be in about 6 or 7, helping our young people. And then we would like our project to be running Monday to Friday. And then we would also like a community hub where we are supporting the community through our outreach program. So in 12 months' time, it's looking really busy, but look, we are really buzzing for it, and we can't wait. We really can't wait.
Busy, but definitely worth it across the board, and that always makes it 10 times worth more. And that brings me to the end of this particular podcast episode. Thank you, David, for taking the time out and chatting to us. And I know I've repeated myself quite a lot through this episode about how worthwhile and important the projects are, and the football team is, to that specific area of Essex. We can all see it, and it really takes someone dedicated to put all that together, and that's yourself. So huge kudos to everything you managed to pull off, and I hope this helps promote all the good stuff that you've been doing as well, particularly when sport has proved to be such an important thing in people's lives, and when the world is in such a difficult place right now too. So going forward, I think there's a lot of positivity to take out of it. So, as ever, thank you for coming on, and we look forward to seeing how the project develops.
Following on from the conversation around racism and discrimination on this episode, we approached the Essex FA for a response in relation to some of the incidents that David was talking about. In a statement, an Essex FA spokesperson said, "Discrimination has no place at any level of football. We're committed to ongoing prevention of this sort of behaviour, but if found proven, strong and appropriate punishments will be enforced. It's important that any allegations are reported and dealt with. During a game, these can be reported to the match referee. After the game, we can be contacted in a variety of ways, highlighted on our website and thefa.com. There is also the Kick It Out website at www.kickitout.org, plus the Kick It Out reporting app. It's crucial individuals have the confidence to report such incidents and they can see the transparency in the investigations. Evidence is gathered and fully investigated in liaison with the FA. There is no ceiling for fines or suspensions of an aggravated nature, and completion of an FA education course is mandatory. We also organise FA education workshops for youth teams, aged under 12s and below, as opposed to a charge for discrimination, which is perceived as a more effective sanction than a charge for the younger players. It's also important to remember the ongoing prevention work. We have a moving forward strategy which outlines our commitment to achieving equality standard intermediate level, affirming that we're focused on ensuring grassroots football opportunities are open and accessible for all. We also collaborated with leagues, clubs and parents to deliver parent workshops last season, which proved very popular. Additionally, the Respect and We Only Do Positive campaigns are sharing best practice, especially on social media. If discrimination is witnessed, please report it. A huge thank you to David for joining us on the podcast to tell this remarkable story about Changing Lives FC and also for sharing the great work Changing Lives have been doing in the community. It really is a reminder, if you didn't need one already, that sport can be a force for good in these strange times. As ever, listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know and spread the word. You can also follow our social pages on Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. All of our handles are at SportsBuildPod. You can also email us at sportsbuildpod@gmail.com if there's anything you want to get in touch with us about. As you will have heard throughout this episode, SportsBuild is very proud to be part of the brand new internet radio station, The Bear. We'll be alternating between recent and archived episodes every Monday evening at 8:30 p.m. so you can hear more of us on there. For information on where to listen, please go to thebear.live. That is it for this particular episode. Take care, everyone, and you will hear from us very soon.